Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday morning, June the 16th. It's not June the 16th, it's June the 19th. Well, we're going to talk about the debate that's going on in Congress this week over a new energy bill. The Senate will try to put together a bill that could be voted on later in the week. A Senate committee tomorrow will take up a bill that would raise about $14 billion from oil companies and use it to develop more renewable energy sources like solar, wind, and cellulosic ethanol. Also yesterday, two House Democrats backed away from controversial proposals that had split members of their party and threatened to delay the energy legislation in the House. We're going to talk about all of this with our guest who is watching all of this very closely. She spent all day on Capitol Hill watching the debate yesterday. And we will get her take on what's going to happen and what should happen. 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you have a question or concern about energy legislation in Congress right now. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Ann Bordetsky. She is a policy analyst at the Natural Resources Defense Council, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you were watching all of this transpire yesterday?
Absolutely, and in some sense, the debate has just begun because today the Senate will be voting on some very key amendments to the energy legislation related to liquid coal, the idea of making transportation fuels from coal, which could be greatly polluting and also very costly to the American taxpayer. And we expect them to take up fuel economy standards for vehicles and other really important issues later this week.
Yeah, it's every minute something going on. You oppose the liquid coal provision. Why is that? A lot of people say that liquid coal is cleaner coal.
Well, simply because it's the wrong direction for America to go right now. We see a lot of support for clean energy future. What consumers really want is more affordable, cleaner energy that they can rely on and that is safe and secure. And we do have renewable energy options here in America that could supply us with domestic fuel alternatives. And efficiency is another great way to reduce our dependence on oil. In fact, it's the cheapest and the cleanest way to reduce our dependence on Middle East oil. Liquid coal would take us in the wrong direction because it produces twice as much global warming pollution per gallon of fuel as gasoline does today. It's simply incompatible with our need to address global warming. And, of course, coal mining also produces significant adverse impacts on our land, our air, and our water quality in a lot of communities stretching across Appalachia and the Rockies. So, and on top of that, the American taxpayer is really being asked to foot the bill to create this new industry, which will be very costly. And the question is, if we're asking the American taxpayer to help create a new energy industry, shouldn't it be a clean energy industry that will protect our environment and provide for affordable energy and help solve global warming as well?
Well, you must be pleased with this development, at least in the House, where the two chair influential House Democrats did back away from a liquid coal proposal.
Yes, and it's unclear if they have backed away from that completely. We expect it to continue to come up because it is a priority for some of the members on this energy committee in the House. But I think people are beginning to recognize that we cannot let a whole new industry go forward that's going to put a more polluting fuel into our gas tanks than the one that we have today when we have better alternatives.
Yeah. And what are you hoping for when it comes to the fuel efficiency standards?
Well, I think the Senate is on the right track. They've put a compromise bill together that would raise fuel economy standards for cars and trucks to 35 miles per gallon by 2020, which is a very reasonable increase, very gradual. And it is in line with what's been recommended for many years now by the National Academies of Sciences and other respected bodies. This would save consumers a tremendous amount of money. For example, in Wisconsin, this would save consumers $449 million per year in basically money spent at the pump. Now, that's a huge savings. So we want to protect the compromise standards that are in the Senate bill because we think they have a real benefit to consumers, and they will also save a significant amount of oil. There are efforts underway right now by Senators Pryor, Levin, and Bond, some of the members that have auto production in their states, to weaken these standards. But I think we're looking for a new direction and for automakers to really sort of put their engineers to work instead of putting their lobbyists to work to make these more fuel-efficient cars that we know they can make and really give consumers a better choice of vehicles when they go to the dealer lot and want to purchase a car that fits their lifestyle but also helps them save money at the pump.
I'm seeing here that the Senate Finance Committee today will take up a bill that would raise about $14 billion from oil companies over the next 10 years and would spend just about exactly that on new incentives for renewable energy, like solar power, wind power, and other renewable fuels. What's your position on that bill that's going to be taken up today by the Senate Finance Committee?
Well, you know, that's a very promising development because one of the barriers to actually creating a renewable energy industry in this country and helping it grow has been, you know, Congress has sort of a stop-start approach to these incentives. And, you know, what industry really needs is a long-term guarantee that the support and the commitment will be there over a number of years, not just 1 or 2 years at a time, to develop renewable energy resources in this country. And so having the Finance Committee put a bill together that provides long-term incentives is really going to help those resources grow. But in reality, you know, the finance legislation will include also incentives for fossil fuel energy resources. It's not just for renewables, you know. So it goes a long way toward cleaner energy, but it's still supporting coal and other fossil-based energy resources, even though they already received a lot of incentives in the last energy bill that Congress passed in 2005.
So, I mean, your take is that the fossil fuel should just be cut off?
No, but I think we need to be very strategic about how we use the limited amount of public funds that we do have to spend on energy development. Traditionally, the fossil fuels industry has received substantially more funding, tremendously more funding than energy efficiency and renewable energy resources. And, you know, at this time when our country is spending so much money, you know, supporting our troops and all of the other important national priorities that we have, the small amount of money that is available, you know, should really go to the things that we're going to need in the future, which is clean renewable energy resources like solar and wind, and energy efficiency, which actually gives you much more energy savings and consumer benefits per dollar spent than any other energy resource.
I'm looking at your position on the, you know, the comprehensive bill, and it looks like you're concerned about there needs to be environmental safeguards for biofuels mm-hmm. to ensure reductions in global warming pollution. What sorts of environmental safeguards in biofuels do you want?
Well, first of all, like any other fuel source, you know, we want to make sure that the very basic protections that we have in our laws today for air quality and for water quality are protected, and then they apply as equally to biofuels as they do to gasoline, because we want to protect public health. Some of the other safeguards that are necessary are protections for sensitive areas and certain public lands that should not be put into production of energy crops. We have tremendous biomass potential in this country, and there's absolutely no reason to go into sensitive areas that are important for conservation, that are important for wildlife habitat. And so what we're looking for is a very basic set of safeguards that say, go ahead, increase fivefold the biofuels production in this country, which is what the energy bill intends to do, but let's make sure that we're not producing those crops on areas that we need for other services.
We're talking about the energy legislation that's being considered in Congress this week. The Senate is actively debating this week. It hopes to pass a bill by the end of the week. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, who says that the energy bill is a positive step in the right direction, but it's still not perfect and needs to be strengthened in order to guarantee progress on critical issues like global warming and increased fuel economy standards and clean, renewable energy sources. We're talking about what she likes and doesn't like about the energy bill being debated in Congress. She is Ann Bordetsky, policy analyst at the Natural Resources Defense Council, and we welcome your thoughts and questions on this for her at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 22 minutes past 8 o'clock. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen's guest will talk about mindfulness training and its use in education. It's coming up after 9. We're talking about the energy bill that's currently before Congress with Ann Bordetsky, policy analyst at the Natural Resources Defense Council, who says that the energy bill should require that 20% of the nation's electricity be produced from renewable energy resources by 2020, guarantee vehicle fuel economy standards of at least 35 miles per gallon over the next decade, require a 10% decrease in total electricity consumption by 2020, and require environmental safeguards for biofuels to ensure substantial reductions in global warming pollution and to protect our land, air, and water quality in our communities. To the phones we go for your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. John in Highland is with us first. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Good morning. Ethanol and hydrogen. Now, hydrogen, you have to have, that's a gas that leaks out of a very minute little hole, and to put hydrogen in a car, the tank would have to be absolutely ridiculously sealed. As far as ethanol goes, right now we know where ethanol is because they aren't producing that much yet. But look at our food prices, and they're going to end up, every farmer is going to put corn in, which I'm not blaming the farmer at all. But how long can we keep sucking the juice out of Mother Earth and expect to survive? And you're talking about humanity now. I'm not talking about why can't people? Okay, one thing, if they went to a 55 mile an hour speed limit and enforced it, look at the amount of oil you would save.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're making a very good point, which is that there are a lot of technologies that Congress especially would like to be a silver bullet for solving all of our problems, like hydrogen. But we've spent so many resources developing this technology, and it could have some potential in the future, but I think it's time for Congress to realize that there are solutions that are available to us today, like efficiency, which is the first place that we should be going to reduce our global warming pollution and reduce our dependence on oil. We have the technology today to make our cars go much farther on a gallon of gas. 35 miles per gallon is such a modest increase in fuel economy that Congress is asking for. And I think you need to let your senators especially know that Wisconsin is ready for higher fuel economy standards. because at this point, you know, so many of the senators are coming under pressure from industries to do nothing to protect the status quo. And they've put together a very modest bill, but they need to know that it should be strengthened and that it should include environmental safeguards because, as you said, you know, biofuels production can have its own adverse unintended consequences, like the rise in corn prices. And we need to put safeguards in place to make sure that we are developing biofuels in a very smart way.
Thank you, John, for the call. Rick in East Troy is with us now. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. I have a question for your guest. I'm wondering if you have any information on the bill, whether the bill's in front of the legislature, whether they will expand tax credits to consumers. I'm a hybrid owner and would be interested in the plug-in conversions that would take my car where I now get 40 to 50 miles a gallon and push me up to over 100 with the opportunity to install photovoltaic at home and basically go gas-free.
Well, two answers to your question. One is this finance committee in the Senate is putting together a tax package that will include incentives for new vehicles. So if you buy a new car that has significantly better fuel economy, you will get a tax credit. Now, since you already have your car, that may not apply because you're looking to make a conversion. And I'm not sure that there's anything in the bill to help offset the cost of converting a vehicle to a plug-in hybrid. But the bill does contain significant amounts of money for developing plug-in technology and making it cost-effective for consumers. But that's something that's going to play out in the future.
Thank you very much, Rick, for the call. Well, we didn't talk about the electricity aspect of this bill yet. You want, or proponents want, 10% decrease in total electricity consumed by 2020. How important is that?
Well, we're looking for two things. It's not that we're looking to decrease electricity production per se. That's the benefit that would come from the energy efficiency measures that are in the bill, because energy efficiency can help us save a tremendous amount of energy. And that's, you know, new coal-fired power plants that don't have to get built because we save that amount of energy. So those are the benefits of the energy efficiency provisions. But what we're also advocating for is a 20% renewable electricity standard in this country, requiring utilities to actually make a certain percentage of their electricity from renewable resources like solar and wind and biomass, et cetera. And, you know, Wisconsin already has a renewable electricity standard requiring 10% of the electricity to come from renewables. What the Senate has proposed is a 15% renewable electricity standard. And if we look at the benefits to the state of Wisconsin of something that's slightly greater, 20% renewable electricity standard, we know it's going to create over 4,000 new jobs. It's going to save consumers $980 million in lower electricity and natural gas bills. So the benefits of renewable electricity standards and energy efficiency far outweigh the cost, but it is going to require Congress to take action and actually make that commitment and require utilities and other energy providers to do renewable energy and provide energy efficiency services to consumers.
Next is Lee in Green Bay. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got an observation. I spent the early 90s to the late 90s in the UK driving two cars from two of the major US manufacturers, General Motors and Ford. Both those vehicles had clean diesel turbocharged engines. Both were, I would say, medium-sized family sedans, Ford Contour equivalent and the Sutton L200. Both got over 40 miles to the gallon. And I'd like to know why here in 2007 in the U.S. we still can't get those vehicles when those manufacturers are still producing them and they're freely available in the U.K. and Europe.
It's a very good question. It is true that European and Japanese and other, and even Chinese fuel economy standards are far more aggressive than those of the U.S. So we know they're supplying, that the U.S. auto industry is supplying much more efficient vehicles to the rest of the world already. In the U.S., our fuel economy has been stagnant since the 1980s, and we haven't raised fuel economy standards since 1975. And, of course, we have the technology. We can see it in the vehicles that we have here in the U.S. You know, the Ford Escape Hybrid is a perfect example of how you can make just the same vehicle but with much better fuel efficiency. And as I mentioned before, the 35-mile-per-gallon standard that's in the Senate bill is very, very modest based on the technologies that we have today. But, you know, already the two senators from Wisconsin, actually, Senator Feingold and Senator Cole, neither one of them supports these very modest fuel economy standards in the Senate bill. And this, to me personally, is shocking because it's a no-brainer. We have the technology, but we need to make the commitment to actually make those vehicles more fuel efficient. And I would encourage all of you to write or call your senator and urge them to support the modest standards that are in the bill and not support efforts to weaken those standards even further, because if we weaken those standards, we'll simply be protecting, you know, business as usual.
I'm sorry, that does surprise me as well. Senator Feingold does not support 35 miles per gallon for fuel economy standards?
He does not. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a critical moment where a lot of senators, you know, on both sides of the aisle who have traditionally not supported raising fuel economy standards or have opposed raising fuel economy standards are understanding that this is a time for change, that this is a time, you know, to really begin addressing our dependence on oil. And we don't know how they're going to vote yet, if they're going to support 35-mile-per-gallon standards that are in the bill or vote to weaken it. That's why it's so mm-hmm. critical that if you care about this issue, that you weigh in with them right away, because we could be taking a vote on this in the Senate as early as tomorrow.
Next, we go to Eric in Green Bay. Hi, Eric.
Hello. I wanted to talk again about electricity and particularly wind power. Nick Rahal is sponsoring a bill that would regulate the wind industry. Currently, the wind industry is unregulated, and many, such as the Audubon Society, don't seem to care about that. They think that the global warming issues seem to trump the species issues, that wind turbines may threaten bats and birds.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So, Eric, you think that the wind industry should be regulated so we don't hurt bats and birds?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'll end up with a situation like we are with hydroelectric. Hydroelectric is clean power, but today we see that it's done a lot of damage, and we're pulling out dams. We need to site them intelligently now.
Yeah. Anything on the regulating the wind power industry in this legislation?
Well, I think that's a very good point. The Rahal bill is, I'm not familiar with the details of that bill. It is a bill, an energy bill, that's been introduced in the House. But I will say this about the wind industry. Just like any other resource, we need to make sure that we're not creating unintended consequences. And I think proper siting of wind power and evaluating the local impacts on a case-by-case basis is really a great thing to do. And I don't know that you could write a regulation to do that across the board for every place in the country, but you should make sure to have a proper siting process with public input to make sure those issues get addressed.
Thank you, Eric, for the call. Martha in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Who in Milwaukee?
Martha, please turn your radio off.
Oh, it is off. I'm sorry. I just didn't hear. Yes, I was interested in the biofuels and the fact that corn is so depleting of the ecosystem. It has to be fertilized. It has to be watered, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas if we would just restore the grasslands of the Great Plains, it would require no reseeding, no irrigation, no fertilization, and it could be harvested sustainably for biofuel. It would be much preferable to corn.
Mm-hmm. Anne?
Well, that's a great point once again, and something that is one of our priority, you know, sort of issues that we're working on with Congress on right now, because, you know, the corn lobby has been very effective at securing a guaranteed market only for their specific product and for getting, you know, a lot of financial incentives paid for by taxpayers to get this industry off the ground. But it is true that we need the corn-based ethanol as a transition technology to sort of give us a jump start for the biofuels industry. And we've gotten that. We do have corn-based ethanol production in this country right now. It's time to sort of leap forward and start using cellulosic biomass resources like the grasslands that you mentioned that will have much a lower impact on our environment and at the same time provide a sustainable energy source that's not going to compete with food and other needs that we have for corn.
Thank you, Martha, for the call. Stephen Oshkosh is with us next. Good morning.
Good morning. I wonder if I could just share a little case study I ran across 2 years ago in my life and just have your guest comment on that very thing. In successive nights, I noticed that our household, a small household with a family of five, we had about 8 compact fluorescent lights, and I think not all were going at any given time. My friend's home, again, a family of five, had 32 or 40 incandescent bulbs going. So I calculated that I was using about a 16th as much electricity for lighting as compared to my friend. And yet if you said to the average person, well, we could use 1/16th as much energy as we currently use, people would laugh at you. But I think that plays out over and over and over again. And the comment most frequently that I hear is, why would I want to conserve energy?
Really? People say that to you?
Yeah, because I think electricity is almost free. I mean, at 7 cents a kilowatt hour, nobody can tell you how much they use or what they pay. It's essentially a free commodity.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's actually a great statistic. I mean, that's absolutely amazing that you can do that. I hope you will teach all of your neighbors to do that.
Yeah, there is something in this legislation that would deal with light bulb efficiency, isn't there?
I think there is. There are efficiency provisions in the bill, and I'm not sure if they're directly related to light bulbs specifically. I think the energy efficiency provisions really have to do with setting standards for appliances and providing energy efficiency incentives for buildings and equipment. In all of these things that go into our built environment that are really important and can be much more efficient. You know, the Energy Star program is such a great success story because you can go into any store now and buy an Energy Star appliance that's going to save you money on your electricity bill. And we want to spread that sort of success to other products and other types of equipment that we use, especially for commercial purposes in everyday life.
We're talking with Ann Bordetsky. She is policy analyst in the Air and Energy Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council. She's talking with us about the energy bill, the new energy bill that the Senate is debating this week and hopes to pass by the end of this week or next week, and welcoming your questions and comments on it. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Overall, Ann Bordetsky says this is a positive bill, but it's not perfect, could be stronger. And we're talking about how it could be made stronger and what the Natural Resources Defense Council would like to see in this legislation. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you between 9 and 11. Children are often told to be quiet and concentrate, but rarely told how. Well, Kathleen Dunn's guest will tell us how, discussing mindfulness training and its use in education. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're getting educated on what's in the energy bill that the Senate is debating this week. And talking with a guest who wants the Senate, wants Congress to pass a clean, more environmentally friendly energy bill. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. If you have a question about what's in it, the energy bill that is, or what should be, we welcome your question for our guest. Anton in Madison is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Excellent program. Appreciate listening to it. My comment is that it seems like when I reviewed this bill and I watched a little bit of the discussion on the Wisconsin Eye video streams and found that, again, in this bill, like many others I looked at that regard any kind of technology or internet or electrical kind of stuff, there's a general lack of rigorous engineering basis for what they want to propose or what's being done. And in this sense, what I want to say is, for instance, credits given to companies with green buildings or green building construction techniques are good, but in this bill, they don't really address what's practical or what's really necessary in many cases today. And I'm speaking from a point of view of a company that operates a data center in the city, and we have a certain need to cool quite a bit of air. And one of the benefits we could have is by using energy off-peak to cool large storage tanks of water or some sort of reserve media, right, where during the day then we could use this to cool our air and not consume the same energy on-peak. A lot of companies could benefit from similar technologies, yet this type of technique or things that use geothermal sources, cold groundwater, that kind of stuff, really don't enter into the picture. And I'm wondering how or what maybe we're not doing, how we're not vocal enough to get this kind of some attention.
Do you know about this, Ann Brodetsky?
You know, I'm not familiar with the exact incentives in the bill that apply to buildings. But, you know, I think in general we need a lot more public education on this issue because some things don't necessarily, you can't do everything through tax incentives, right? A certain amount of public education supported by your local and state government and certainly by the federal government to make sure that, you know, business owners like yourselves are aware of the opportunities and can take advantage of them, because I assume you're actually saving money by doing mm-hmm. that, too. You know, that can be done through education. Now, I would say, you know, that by no means is the Senate bill perfect, and Congress often lags, you know, the country in terms of what they're doing because they follow on the heels of entrepreneurs. They don't lead. And so if you have an innovative idea and you think it should be in the mix and that the rest of the country would benefit, you know, contact your senators and let them know. They can help address your concerns, or maybe they can even help, you know, publicize this issue to other senators and get more attention to it. You know, I think it's a good opportunity to be proactive because Congress needs a push and a shove, you know, every now and then to do the right thing.
We have an email from Robin in Shorewood who says, about a year ago, didn't Congress pass legislation that would update the standards for the miles per gallon rating that is posted on new cars? Where does that stand? Do you know about that one?
Well, what Congress did is they asked the Environmental Protection Agency to update how they calculate the fuel economy that you see on the sticker of new vehicles. And EPA has a very outdated process for how they do this, which means that your real-world fuel economy that you experience on the road is usually different from what you see on a sticker when you go to the auto dealer. And what they did is they updated how they do that calculation so it better reflects real-world fuel economy that you experience in the city or on the highway. But those numbers actually don't affect the fuel economy standards for the vehicles. We haven't updated fuel economy standards since 1975 in this country.
Stephen Appleton is with us now. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I was wondering about the energy bill and if there was anything in it to allow manufacturers to make ethanol from anything but corn, and if there was anything to help us have more vehicles that run on the 85. My wife and I both do, but, I mean, it's hard to go ahead and find vehicles to run on it, and it'd be nice to find smaller ones that could run on it.
Absolutely, it does. The Senate bill has what's called an expanded renewable fuel standard. What it requires is 36 billion gallons of biofuels production, which is a five-fold increase over the biofuels production that we have in the United States today. And only a small portion of that, about 12 billion gallons, is going to go to corn-based or conventional biofuels. And the rest of that market will be made up of cellulosic or advanced biofuels. So Congress is trying to sort of move the ball forward and create a guaranteed market and some certainty for investors and entrepreneurs and farmers to begin developing that next stage of advanced biofuels as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Steve, for the call. Randy and Laval, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I did want to offer something. The hydrogen issue is interesting because just probably over the last couple of years, the focus of hydrogen and using hydrogen, as in the past it was to run vehicles on all hydrogen fuel, and the tank, as the one caller reported, had to be large or under quite a lot of compression, and that was very expensive. Now they're using hydrogen as an actual hybrid to some other fuel and manufacturing the hybrid out of from distilled water right on the go. And that's very exciting because essentially what you're doing then is filling water in one container on your vehicle, mm-hmm. and then direct current is separating hydrogen and oxygen and then metering so many milliliters in with gasoline or diesel. And these units are made in Canada right now. They're expensive, but you get an incredible boost on fuel mileage. And one other amazing thing, which is very low pollution then, because hydrogen burns so hot that you get no pollution.
Yeah. You know, to me, the most important thing with hydrogen is it has a lot of potential and it has a lot of hurdles. But what we do know about hydrogen is that it's a complex technology that may or may not be available for your, you know, everyday consumer to use, you know, a decade or more from now. And while we should support the development of hydrogen technology, we don't want to let that distract us from what we have to be doing today, which is applying the technologies available for vehicles to the ones that we're going to be building over the next decade. You know, vehicles are on the road for over 15 years. It's going to take a very long time to turn over the vehicle stock that's on the roads and to actually have a more fuel-efficient fleet. So we need to raise fuel economy standards so that we're taking advantage of technologies on the shelves today and focus on hydrogen for the future.
Is there anything in this bill about, I remember President Bush pushing some years ago during a State of the Union address for tax credits for those companies that want to build more nuclear power plants? Is there anything in this bill relating to nuclear power?
There's nothing in this bill now relating to nuclear power. You know, I think the nuclear debate has come up a number of times recently in Congress. And, you know, I think people are beginning to recognize that nuclear does have a role to play in our future, just like coal and other energy resources that are already being produced today. But we don't want to put the thumbs on the scale in favor of nuclear. We want to let it compete in the market against other technologies so that we're not subsidizing nuclear and favoring it over other important energy resources like renewables. Mm-hmm. And so let's let it compete and see what happens, and the market will decide which low-emission technology wins out.
What about drilling for more domestic oil?
There are efforts, and they will play out this week in the Senate, to, again, open up our coastal areas to drilling and also open up the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. But I think at this point, they're not being taken seriously because the country has moved past that in a way in realizing that we should focus our energy on a clean energy policy that we haven't had in this country for many decades. And so those issues will continue to come up, but I think this Congress has moved beyond the debates about drilling.
A caller who didn't want to hold or maybe didn't want to go on the air called in to say that Senators Cole and Feingold oppose the fuel efficiency standards or fuel economy standards because supporting it would hurt the GM factory in Janesville and jeopardize jobs in Wisconsin. Is that what's going to happen if we say 35 miles a gallon? Are we going to have to shut down the GM plant in Janesville?
You know, I don't think that's true. And, you know, the auto companies, you have to take what they say with a grain of salt. They opposed seatbelts when they were first proposed. They opposed putting airbags into vehicles. I mean, over and over again, they've said no, no, no. And in spite of all the changes that have been made, they've made better vehicles and succeeded in giving consumers what they want. I mean, clearly, Rome wasn't built in a day. Reducing our dependence on oil is going to take a lot of effort. But it's also a huge opportunity that the American auto industry can embrace. They can use this as an opportunity to revamp the factories that they have to actually produce more advanced technology, more efficient vehicles. And by doing that, they will create new jobs, not only in their own factories, but, you know, among the supplier base that they have here in the United States, making all the little parts that go into more fuel-efficient vehicles. So, you know, I think it's time for them to embrace it as an opportunity. The technology is definitely there. Experts have said this over and over again, to get to 35 miles per gallon. And we have over a decade to get there because the standard is set for 2020. So we have the time and we have the technology. And we don't know exactly what the impact will be, but if the technology is there, we're pretty certain that the impact will actually help benefit the auto industry.
Well, we have a line open for you and still some time for you if you have a question about the energy bill that Congress is debating. The Senate is debating it this week. We're talking about what's in the bill and what our guests would like to see in the bill. She's with the Natural Resources Defense Council, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Some important votes coming as early as today on fuel efficiency or economy standards, 35 miles per gallon. Over the next decade, that's the legislation. Also, some important amendments dealing with liquid coal as a fuel. And our next caller is Rebecca in Platteville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Okay, I will start this off by saying I'm certainly no engineer. However, I don't understand if every municipality, every farm, has a collection point for their manure, and municipalities have sewage treatment plants, and poop has got to be a renewable resource. Why can't we get methane from that? Why can't they make methane plants out of that?
Well, you could, and there are some facilities that are doing that. For example, there's a very innovative company in Nebraska that's using the methane to provide power for a facility that produces biofuel. So they're actually tremendously decreasing the fossil fuel inputs and creating a fuel that over the full fuel cycle of it has much lower emissions than conventional gasoline. So, you know, I think these things are happening. They're not happening quickly enough. But I think a lot of entrepreneurs are looking at methane and how to best use that as an energy resource.
Next is John in Madison. Hi, John.
Hey, actually, I'm on the road. I hope you guys can hear me okay, so I'll make this sort of quick. It's a very interesting show. I spent a lot of time in Brazil, and several years ago, a decade or so ago, the people came up and started promoting the use of alcohol as a fuel supply, and we were told by the petroleum companies that it was virtually impossible to do. Brazil imports no oil. They grow sugar cane, and from the sugar cane, they produce an alcohol where their entire automobile run by alcohol. There's two positives from that. One is they have absolutely no dependency on foreign crude. The second thing is it has done an incredible job for their economy because their money is not going out of the country, and they are self-sustaining as far as their production is concerned, which means all of the money used to produce alcohol or produce fuel stays within the country. And I'm wondering why the United States has never made a move such as Brazil. And I'm not talking about a few gas stations. Every gas station in Brazil sells alcohol. It's cheap, it's inexpensive, and you also keep your economy stabilized. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear your guest comments. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I think the one lesson we can learn from Brazil is what they did there is remarkable. But it didn't happen overnight, and it didn't happen by itself. It took a concerted government policy to produce the fuel, to make sure that fuel is available at every single gas station, and to make vehicles flex fuel vehicles. It took government standards and mandates to make that happen. And I think oftentimes our Congress is afraid of putting mandates on industry in order to make things like this happen. But that's really what it's going to take because, the oil companies are hesitant to embrace biofuels, and they own the infrastructure, and it's very hard to get the ethanol or alcohol, as you put it, ethanol is a type of alcohol, pumps into place and to make these things available to consumers. So what Congress needs to hear is that, you know, we, the American consumer, we support mandates to put alternative fuels infrastructure in place, to bring biofuels to the pump, and to have every vehicle be flexible fuel. I mean, that's what they need to hear in order to take the action that will create this change. The other interesting thing about Brazil is that, you know, while they've succeeded in replacing all of their foreign oil imports with ethanol, their overall oil consumption is much, much smaller than that of the United States. So it's actually a little easier for them to do that because they're not consuming nearly as much oil as we are. We consume a quarter of the world's oil, 21 million barrels every single day. So, the task at hand for us is a little bit larger, but we can still do it if we couple biofuels together with efficiency and also, you know, smarter design communities that make it a little bit easier for us to just drive less.
All right, we have just about a minute to go. Headed back over to Capitol Hill to watch the action today.
Absolutely. We're going to be facing some really tough votes today on this issue of liquid coal that I mentioned. We're going to be having votes here for the next few days. And, Congress has the opportunity right now to really put America, you know, on a new direction in terms of energy policy and start reducing global warming pollution. But it's going to take a couple of tough votes to get there.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ann Brodetsky, policy analyst with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour and to Leo Duran for on-air production. And let me also thank Keisha Mabra and Christina Taylor for production of programs also this morning. And thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store 1-800-747-7444. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.